Okay, so this is Jackson Core interviewing.
Franklin Davis Lawford Jr.
Put it over here. For the story core. You don't have to hold it.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you just sit down. She needs to be able to hear you. So basically, what the idea is, they want us to basically record these interviews with those with the older generation, so we can kind of have this reference library of stories from people who lived, you know, throughout the 20th century. Then they archive them in the Library of Congress, so figured you'd be a good subject for it.
I guess my only concern is, how do we know it's picking up our voices?
It is. I guarantee it. I mean, I can try this. Okay, so basically, I mean, there's no real, like, necessary structure to it. I mean, it's just kind of like, I want to hear about your like life story. So.
Well, I don't know whether you want to hear my whole life story, but we were talking yesterday. I was talking about my dad and Herb Southall, our across-the-street neighbor, during the Second World War. And they were not in the military. They could have been called, but they never got to them because they were older than most of the people that went to the military. And they were air raid wardens. And one had a gas mask and one had a helmet. And still in my garage, I have a white air raid helmet.
Really?
So I'll bequeath that to you.
The white air raid helmet for, like, what did that signify?
Well, it was white. It showed that they were a warden, block warden, mm-hmm. And it was to protect them from shrapnel, I guess. It was more for show than reality.
Mm-hmm. And so you were born in Los Angeles or a?
Born in Southgate, California, March 20th, 34.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about your childhood. What was it like growing up in the 30s?
Well, I early on, my folks moved to Los Angeles. We had a house on Hyperion, 833, I think was the address. Lived there until I was 7. My folks built a home in San Marino, California. From 7, and they lived there until, they lived there until we moved to Arizona, so that would have been probably 70. They built a home in Sedona.
Mm-hmm. Did you grow up in the Great Depression? I mean, was that still
something? The Depression really didn't end until the early 40s, so I was considered a depression baby. That and the war, we had very little luxuries. Couldn't afford them in the 30s and the 40s. They just weren't available.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that sort of programmed me to be somewhat of a hoarder. If you look at my garage, you can tell that. Your grandmother gave me a birthday card one time. And it said, for the man who has everything, and when you open it up, it says, and keeps it in the garage. There's some truth in that. So as far as my childhood, the war started when I was 7. I've always perceived it more as a Pacific War than because the troops went out from there. The Japanese were interned there. Our attention was more on the Pacific War, which was unlike most of the country.
Mm-hmm. So your perception of the European War is more of an academic one than...
Correct.
Okay, you're going to need me, and then you want me to come over there and help you? Mm-hmm.
And your father was...
My father was a pharmacist.
That's right.
He and his partner built the Huntington Pharmacy and opened it in 1944 in San Marino. At one point in time, it was the largest privately owned pharmacy in Southern California. It had a very large prescription business and was somewhat of a social meeting place.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the subsequent owners, it changed hands several times, and the subsequent owner lost it. He was found to be, I don't know all the circumstances, but dealing illegally in some drugs, and so he lost the whole pharmacy. But it had long given way to the major chains. The I don't remember anything exceptional of my grade school. I liked math. As I said, I was raised in California, Southern California, in San Marino. And when I went to college, high school, it was combined with South Pasadena, so it was South Pasadena San Marino High School from which I graduated. I was, if I may brag a bit, I was Commissioner General, which is a fancy term for being student body president, which I, a student body of around 950, and I won by a massive landslide of 10 votes. So, but that was an interesting period of time. I then went on to, actually there were 20 out of my high school class that went to Stanford. I graduated with an undergraduate degree from Stanford after 3 years and two quarters, and then went on and graduated from medical school after that. A friend of mine and I graduated early from high school, from college, and traveled around the world for 6 months, which I'd always enjoyed traveling, but that sort of whetted my appetite to continue to travel. And traveling was a lot different then. There were no hostels. There were no pull-along bags. Especially in Asia, there were no moderate hotels. There were either flea bags or the classic hotels. For instance, we did a couple of places. We did stay in YMCAs, but that was a marvelous experience.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you more about your journey around the world. This would have been the second semester of your senior year of college, but instead you graduated early.
College was three quarters. And I graduated a quarter early.
Right.
I had the good fortune of, during high school, for 2 years I painted houses. And one of the fellows that, he was older than I was, Chuck Getchell, and I forget how it came up, but he was living with the president in the president's home, President Sterling's home at Stanford. Mm-hmm. They had a girl that lived in as a sort of a nanny and a male student that lived in as a servant boy, if you will. So when he graduated, he asked me if I wanted to do that. So I lived a year in the president's home. Responsibilities were to vacuum the house on the weekends, do the kitchen on the maid's day off on Wednesday, and that was about it. But it was an opportunity to understand the workings of the university a little more. I will tell a story on myself. Getting ready to graduate, I took a course in economic geography my last quarter, and I graduated with 180 units. Graduation was 180, and I had to have my last units. I took a course in economic geography because I was going to be traveling and wanted to understand that better. It was also sort of a snap course that the football players used to take. I flunked my first midterm. And the reason was, as trained in science, you think in terms of broad concepts. And so, as an example, I knew that there were three railroads that traversed transcontinentally, three major railroads. But I didn't know some of the individual little stations, and that's what the guy wanted. Mm-hmm. So I was worried about not passing that. And somehow the subject came up in front of Dr. Sterling. And he says, obviously I can't do anything about whether you pass or not, but I'll have my secretary ask how you're doing now after your first problems. Well, if you're a teaching assistant and you get a call from the president's secretary inquiring about a student, you probably got the message that maybe I'll let the guy graduate. Actually, I did pull up. I figured out what the guy wanted on tests. Passed it on my own. He didn't give it to me, but it certainly didn't hurt me.
And so then where'd you start in your transglobal?
The flight from Los Angeles to Hawaii on a big old fat Boeing Stratocruiser, awesome. 4-engine prop, was a 11-hour trip.
Wow.
We spent a couple of days there staying with a friend of Bob's mother's who lived there. We went from there to Japan via, I guess it must have been Wake Island, just in transit. Spent about 2 weeks in Japan at the height of the cherry blossom season, which was great. We left in March. Mm-hmm. From there, we went to Hong Kong, spent time there, to Manila, to Thailand. And at that point in time, the Imperial Palace was clear out on the boondocks. There was nothing around it. You go back now, and it's sort of downtown.
In Thailand,
Bangkok. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how we found out about it, but there was a guy that had an old Army half-ton truck, and he drove us and two women who were traveling, older women, drove us overland to Angkor Wat in Cambodia. And I think there were 33 rivers that we traversed without bridges. So that was a true experience. Angkor Wat was, and I've been back since then, an amazing place. Drove back to Bangkok, flew from there to India, where we spent a month. It's a lot of train travel.
A month in India.
Went up to Darjeeling, which is one of the hill stations out of Calcutta. From there, we flew to the Middle East. We flew into Lebanon and spent a couple of days there. It was called the Paris of the Mediterranean at that time. Then to India, to Egypt. From Egypt, we flew into Vienna, which was our first European capital. And then we spent probably two and a half months in Europe. And then flew home on an old Lockheed Constellation. Again, a long trip. Stopped in Shannon, Ireland, before. You couldn't fly the Atlantic in one fell swoop. Mm-hmm. We bought a Volkswagen Beetle. My dad loaned us the money for it. We bought that, drove it around, shipped it home, and sold it for a little more than we paid for it. So that was very nice.
You drove the Beetle around England, or around Europe?
Around Europe.
And what year was this?
That would have been 56.
So did you still see any of the effects from the war?
Yes.
Especially in Japan?
No, not so much. Well, we were in Hiroshima, which at that time was a flat, one-story city. And the only thing that stuck above one story was the arch, and it's still there, metal dome. Mm-hmm. It was an arch exhibit hall or something. And then the post office in Munich one quarter of it was the functioning post office, and it was a block-sized building. Three quarters of it was just rubble, and they had rebuilt one quarter of it. So we did see a fair amount. That was what, 56, 12 years after the war was over, and there was still a lot of reparative work being done.
So then you came home and.
Came home, went to medical school.
At Stanford.
I spent a year in Philadelphia as an intern, 3 years as a resident in Minneapolis at the University Hospital, and a year at the same place with the Cancer Society Fellowship. I had been able to continue my residency, I didn't have to go to Vietnam because I signed up for the Berry Program, which basically said, if you'll promise 2 years to the military, we'll let you finish your training. So after I finished my training, I went to El Paso, And that's where I met your grandmother. I like to tell the story that I was determined never to marry a nurse, let alone an army nurse. Of course, the rest is history. She was there because immediately after graduating from nursing school, she'd signed up with the army that basically said, if you'll give us 3 years of your time, we'll send you to Europe. She had, I think, 6 months in El Paso. We met. She went to Europe, made several trips back and forth. We're married. I was had 18 months in El Paso after she left, and we got married in October, which was half that time. So the first half of the 18 months was traveling back and forth. I think I made 5 trips over, and she made 2 back. And then after we were married, she went back, and I probably made 3 more trips over, and maybe she made 1 trip back. Mm-hmm. That was kind of nice. I mean, when I finally got over there, she still had almost 6 months left, and I studied for my boards and planned our weekend trips, and it was a nice period of time.
And where was this?
In Landstuhl, which is right across the Autobahn from Ramstein, which is the major air evac airport for the military. Still is.
And was this the same period of time where Granny famously defied the German military with her sunglasses?
No, well, that's one of our trips. We went to Berlin. We took a commercial tour into it, but we wore uniforms, so they couldn't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. They had to let us in. And the guy wanted her to take off her glasses, but she didn't have to do. And that shouldn't surprise you.
So you were... Did you ever actually see any... Well, what year was this? 60...
Well, that would have been 60... Late 60, early 61.
So Vietnam hadn't started yet? Not really.
No, wait a minute. 60... Late... No, way, I'm way off.
Yeah, because if you had to sign a draft avoidance thing, or
that would have been 60, 65, late 65, early 66.
Right.
And it was interesting. One morning, we were probably in Berlin, and at that point in time, all of the historical aspects of Berlin were in the Soviet sector. Mm-hmm. So Trisha didn't want to go with me, but I got up, went to Checkpoint Charlie, signed in with the American people that I was going over, wore my uniform, of course, and walked across the boundary. And on the opposite side, he couldn't stop me. A Soviet officer got out and took down notes, probably my rank, what I looked like, et cetera, et cetera. I just kept walking. And it'd have been an international incident if he'd stopped me. It was peculiar times, interesting times. And of course, now the wall came after that.
What was the Soviet sector like? I mean, was it like as oppressive as all the stories? Or not the stories, but the.
It was very controlled. There was no glitz. Unter der Linden was the main street. We had lunch there, very plain lunch, not much to be talked about. Old cars, people just were. They were not of the same age as the West Germans. Their cars were old. Their clothes were old fashioned. They just were not prosperous.
So what did your military service consist of?
I was obligated to the Army for 2 years because of my year of fellowship with the Cancer Society. One of the general hospitals, which are the teaching hospitals, they needed somebody with oncology training. So they needed that at Beaumont in El Paso, and that's how I got there. Mm-hmm.
So you spent...
I was there 2 years.
2 years in El Paso. And then what? And then you went back to...
Well, I spent 6 months in Europe. Mm-hmm. And then had an opportunity to go into practice in Phoenix with Dave Pent. And was with him, I guess, 10 years. And then he retired. I was in two offices there. The last office I was in, it became apparent that the landlord was going to really raise the rent because he had a monopoly. I had enough forewarning that I built my own building, probably 3,000 foot. It was a small building, and practiced there until I retired. I retired in 8 years ago, 9 years, let's see, I was 75, so what's that figure out? I guess. So towards the last, I was not working full time, but I was still getting a paycheck.
So you've been traveling the world like pretty much your entire life, but was that happening while you were practicing, or were you just too busy, or?
I didn't have the opportunity. So the first real opportunity I had to travel was 1980, and a group of the AGL, which is my organization. Mm-hmm. There were 12 of us and our wives went to China, and at that time. Endoscopy, which is operating small tubes, was barely being done. So it's a true statement that our group basically started endoscopy in China, and that's 35 years ago, and they're essentially equal to us now as far as their technical abilities. Their judgment, I think, is missing in some areas. But we basically started endoscopy in China, and now another story that Trish reminds me of. I had traveled around the world. I had traveled to Europe to see her. Went into practice, and I can remember sitting at my desk, thinking to myself, "Oh, I'll never travel again," which didn't turn out to be such. So in 1980, we went to China, mainland China. It had just opened as a country.
Really, in 1980?
To the Westerner.
Wow.
It was basically closed. It was certainly closed to the United States. Mm-hmm. There was some Western countries' presence. And then after that, through the AGL, I've just had a lot of opportunities to travel.
So most of your traveling opportunities have come more recently rather than...
After 1980.
Right. So, I guess, like, I don't know. I mean, tell me about some of the places you've been. I mean, you've been, like, everywhere. Well, what was your favorite place to travel, I guess?
I'll be honest with you, I don't have a favorite place. One of them would be Switzerland. Always enjoyed the Far East. I recently went through some old photos that I took while traveling around the world and have a picture of myself along with Bob, but the pictures of me sitting on top of the Great Pyramid in Egypt. Mm-hmm. And of course you can't even get to near it now. All of the airports at that time, he simply went out a door and walked on the tarmac over to the plane. There was no security. It was a different period of time. I think that was one of the more memorable experiences. Isfahan in Iran was an area that I've not been back to, would love to go back to. It's the cultural center of Iran. I think traveling with Trisha, I think the South America, both the Chilean and the Argentinian side are wonderful, beautiful areas. I like to see major churches. I like to have been at major museums, but I guess I really like vistas more. I like seeing the countryside. Kind of like in Sedona.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like I should ask you about all these, like where were you when Kennedy was shot? I mean, you remember?
Doesn't everybody? I left the hospital. I was driving to I wanted to throw a party for the staff and the other residents, and I was driving down there to meet with the management. Got there and we sort of stumbled around for a minute, and then I said, maybe I ought to come back and we'll talk about it at some other time. And then was glued to the television mm-hmm. for all through that period of time. The other thing I can remember is being in the OB kitchen on the labor and delivery floor at the time of the missile crisis. And that was a memorable period of time.
For that whole week?
I don't remember, to be honest with you, how long it lasted, but
it was about a week.
It appeared to be touch and go. Very little television about it, as opposed to the Kennedy assassination.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what was the feeling like at that time? Because I mean, you look back on it now, it's like it feels like there's no way that we would ever have gotten into a nuclear war with the Soviets, but. What did it feel like at the time?
I guess it was just a question of the unknowns. I don't think if we got into a war with them, would it be a nuclear war? Mm-hmm. We could have gone to war with them without it being nuclear, but then things can progress rather quickly. Just a feeling of uncertainty. But the Kennedy assassination riveted the whole country. He was such a popular president. Mm-hmm. But in reality, he did his 1,000 days. He accomplished very little. I don't know whether your readings have suggested that.
Yeah, basically, he didn't do a whole lot. I mean, he was a pretty boy. He looked good on TV, and but it didn't seem like he affected a whole lot of change.
Another instance when his brother was shot. That just shows you how history can be changed very, very easily, very quickly. And I guess that's in part what I worry about our current president-elect.
I don't know, I feel like...
Anything else?
I mean, I feel like it hasn't, I feel like there's more to tell.
Well, I can tell you about the morning that I flew over to San Diego from home. Granny had gone over the night before. Kimberly was going to be induced mm-hmm. with you at that time. And knowing some obstetrics, although I hadn't practiced it in 20-some years, and Franklin picked me up, I was very apprehensive. And your mom did not want a cesarean section. She wanted to experience the whole show. And I've told you, you were induced because you were a fetal size, large baby. I was at the head of the table, and when your head delivered, I realized how big you were going to be. And I thought to myself, oh, shit, because it looked like a setup for a shoulder dystocia, which can be devastating to a baby. Fortunately, that didn't happen. Your clavicle broke. That probably helped you get through. But that was a wonderful period of time. You were there, but you probably don't remember it.
How so?
Your first child. Mm-hmm. Puts a strain on you now, but... it was a wonderful period of time.
Yeah, there's a picture of you and I on the steps of the burning house.
Oh, Granny loves that one.
Mm-hmm. I think it's upstairs somewhere.
You had your foot propped up against my leg.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good photo. I like that.
Granny and I can remember we shared the bedroom with you on a couple of houses. Mm-hmm. And we knew when you would wake up because... there'd be some commotion, but after a while you start throwing things out of the crib, and then pretty soon you'd be standing up with nothing. Nothing was left to throw. Those are just for any grandparent can tell you those are special times. Mm-hmm. And your brothers and your cousins came along. They're special too, but there's always something different about the firstborn, which I was, which your mother was, and it's got its blessings, but it's also carries some extra burdens. I married late and had children late. And I've just been so very fortunate to been able to see them, to be with them as long as I have been. I probably 5 years ago, my high school alumni association got busy, put together a website, and I went to my graduating class, and there were, I think 286 of us had graduated, and at least 25% had already died. And some of them in their late 40s and early 50s. I have been so lucky to have had my health that's carried me this far. Mm-hmm. So whenever I check out, I can't complain.
So looking back on it now, what would you list as like your biggest accomplishment, or what are you most proud of?
I'm not sure.
Did you open it up down there?
I Jackson, I don't know. I feel like to delve into that question, I would be bragging. I've just been very fortunate. I guess my biggest accomplishment was not doing anything that adversely affected the rest of my life. I wasn't a perfect kid. I got in a whole bunch of trouble one time when, probably about the sixth grade, when I melted Crayolas on the school radiator. that was not at all life-changing experience. But if the kid that did it with me, whom I can't tell you who it was, And don't ask me why the hell we did it.
I like that you still remember that, though.
I guess that there was a period of time in medical school and early residency where I chose to see a psychiatrist for probably 4 or 5 years. I guess I had doubts about myself. Wasn't totally happy with myself. And then he never told me what to do or what to say, but simply asked questions.
Excuse me?
This is going to the Library of Congress, Mom.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
That just helped me understand myself. I guess can't help herself. I guess I was too introspective. But that's that's a little hard to live with, but it certainly never hurt me. I don't know what else, what other areas I'd like to have you hear about. I forget how the nominating process for the Commissioner General, how that went. But I was never on an in-group. I was never part of an in-group. Certainly had my friends, but I can remember being at home in the den. Someone called me and said, "Where are you?" And I said, "At home." Obviously, we didn't have cells in it.
Uh-huh.
So, well, you come back. You've been nominated. If I'd have been on the in group, I would have been waiting to hear that. I never felt that I was part of the in group. And even with the AGL, and I've been Executive Vice President Medical Director since 2000, Medical Director since 98, Executive Director since, Executive Vice President since 2000, I just sort of fell into the position. I was active. I've never been able to push myself. And I didn't have to, but that did mean that when I went to college, they had fraternities, no sororities. They had eating clubs. And I didn't fall into a group that joined the fraternities and didn't want to do second best with an eating club, which was stupid. I should have.
Oh my God, Steve.
Just because I wasn't asked, I didn't try to join.
No.
That was stupid on my part. I think that part of the recognition I achieved in junior high school, which was 1 year for me, was that I was master of ceremonies for a musical that was put on. And so my classmates saw me. They knew the name, which I guess allowed me to be considered for public office. Similar when you were in your play, mm-hmm. and ended up on the on the council, was it, or
yeah, school board.
Let me see your list. I'll see if there's anything else I want to tell you. Trish, is that my bag? I got to put this in there. Do you want me to tell you about my love life?
Not particularly.
Oh, yes, you do. As you know, just celebrated our 50th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And love was much different. Love only grew through those 50 years. And it was always, I always knew, and Granny always knew, that the other one was thinking about them and didn't want to do anything that would make them unhappy. That didn't mean we didn't have arguments. It didn't mean that I didn't lose arguments. And especially this last year when I, Granny's 10 years younger than I am. I always felt that I would be in a position of taking care of her. And frankly, last year without her, I don't know what I would have done. Mm-hmm. And my love, whatever that is, only grew. Spent our honeymoon in NASA.
In where?
NASA.
In the Bahamas.
In the Bahamas during a typhoon, a hurricane. The outskirts of a hurricane.
Still.
Tell you about my grandparents. I mean, yeah, I should tell you about them. My granddad, Zeiser, died at a very early age. He had a gallbladder surgery and there was some sort of complication. And he died at 55, I think, or 60, somewhere in that. My grandmother Zeiser lived to be 106,
wow.
Which was too long. She lost her eyesight pretty much. She lost her hearing pretty much. Mm-hmm. And I always maintain that longevity scares the hell out of Trish. My grandmother, my granddad was German background. My grandmother was, his family came out of Quebec, Canada, so she had a Canadian, a Catholic background. English, French. My grandmother, Minnie, was a Southerner. My granddad, a law firm, was a veterinarian. I moved to the Imperial Valley early on and took care of the large animals, not cats and dogs. Mm-hmm. His family came out of the Midwest, basically Iowa, and Ohio. Family heritage. They've been around for a goodly period of time. Well, when do I get to start asking you questions?
Well, we only have, I think it's only going to let us record for another, It's only going to let us record for a minute or so.
Okay, so we're through.
I guess so.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right, here. So that was Jackson Corr interviewing...
Franklin Davis Lawford, Jr. LOFFER